The Burrows of Berea is a conversational podcast.
We study the Bible and we talk about it.
Not all of us are of the same faith.
And one of us doesn't have a faith.
But we still love one another, and we're going to continue to talk about these things.
The things we believe in and the things we believe about what we read in the Bible. Not all of these are necessarily true. Some of it is opinion and speculation. Thank you for
listening and speculating with us.
There you go. That was good. Yes.
You are listening to the Burrows of Berea.
Noty note, 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 noty note, note, notes, noty note, notes from the underground.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to Notes from the Underground. This is a podcast where we take a microscope to some of Christianity's thornier topics and people. I'm your host, Tiziana Mom So Hard Severse. And with me behind the glass is Rocket Man Andy Bishop. It's just me and you, Andy.
It's just us.
Which I think is wonderful because what we're going to be talking about today is Andy's favorite topic, astrology.
Hold for sound effect.
Yeah. I know you're a huge fan.
Huge fan. Yeah.
Yeah. Me and huge fan.
I consult the stars every morning.
Well, since you're godless, we all know. So obviously.
Mars is my god, I think.
I think so. Which actually is a wonderful banter that we did not plan, but brings us to kind of the point of our discussion. So, you know, what occurred to me as I was kind of planning the 2024 podcast season is I remember when I first started doing hair.
Mm-hmm.
This was like, I don't know.
So long ago.
Oh my gosh, so long ago. Yeah, like a bazillion years ago.
Who were those people?
Oh, I don't even know. I don't know. I was bald because that was when I shaved my head. Yeah. I had no hair and I was doing hair, which was like beyond ironic.
Right.
Right. It was lovely. But, you know, so I was working at this little salon. It was probably, I want to say like 2005, maybe 2004, 2005.
Was it the one that was down near Hot Dog World or was it before that?
If that doesn't tell you the type of salon I was working in.
Yeah.
That one all down by the Hot Dog World. Now, right, I know most of you listeners aren't from the South, but I'm going to tell you right now, my salon was down by Hot Dog World. It was owned by a woman. It's called Profiles Hair Salon. And it was owned by a woman who had been doing hair since you could smoke in the salon. And that was one of the things she used to complain about, the fact that you couldn't smoke in the salon
anymore. You couldn't stand over somebody's head with a lit cigarette?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And I worked there. And she was lovely to me. You know, she was absolutely lovely to me. I had to be real particular about certain things in that salon because there, you know, it was... there was definitely like some conservative Southern vibes,
sure.
Right? But in any case, you know, and it had looked exactly the same since she opened it in 1985. And she was doing the exact same hair that she'd been doing since 1985.
And if you couldn't smoke, you could always just lick the wall.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, exactly. Well, and she used to say this thing that I thought was so brilliant. And I really do want to interject. I love this woman. She got me started on my career. Mm-hmm. But she used to look, whenever there was a smell of perms, you know, which perms have fallen out of favor.
Yeah.
Okay? But there was a period of time where they were like the du jour hair service, you know, everybody got perms at all times. And so, you know, because they were not as de jure as they had been when she first started doing hair, you would put on that perm smell. And I don't know, Andy, if you've ever smelled a perm.
I remember this smell.
Yeah. They smell like kind of like if rotten eggs farted, right? Like if rotten eggs ate a rotten egg or like a broccoli salad and then farted. That's the smell of a perm.
I love it.
So this is the smell, right? This is the smell. If you don't know, now you know. And she used
I can
to,
almost smell it.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Broccoli salad egg farts. Anyhow. So she would start doing that smell. And if there was ever like a teenager, which, you know, oftentimes people come with their kids, whatever, if there was ever people that weren't familiar with that smell, she would look at them, take a deep inhale and go, smelled like money. That's what she used to say. All right. So this is the level. And I remember people would come in and they would talk about, they would come in saying, oh, you know, now's the time to get my hair cut. I looked at the signs. And they would say this, I want my hair to grow. So I looked it up and today's the day. So I'm gonna get my hair cut today because the signs say it's gonna grow. And I always found that really fascinating and confusing because A, I didn't know what the f*** they were talking about. But like also B, as far as I know, I grew up, First Assemblies of God, Pentecostal Christian, fundamentalist Christian.
It was it a world without astrology?
Which now?
When you grew up.
Yes.
That's what I was saying. Like, that's wild. How does that not? accidentally on the periphery be a thing you knew about. Yeah.
Well, I mean, you knew about it, but you stayed away from it.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
So, growing up as a child, it was always like, this is the work of the devil. This is demonic. You know, knowing your sign and participating in astrology is tantamount to, you know, tarot reading. And, you know, they basically treat it like it was expistacy, which if you don't know what that is.
Is that right?
Expistacy. Yeah. It's a weird word.
What a
it's
word.
Also called like hispiscacy, but I don't know that one as well because they didn't talk about that.
That one's even harder.
I know that one's really hard for me to say. Expistacy is hard. E-X-I-S-P-I-T-Y.
Ecstasy.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm done here.
It was a thing they used to do in like super ancient times. It was reading the entrails of a sacrificed animal to determine the wills
I've
of the gods.
I've heard of that, yeah.
Yeah. So
we will literally just do anything to try to get a message, won't we?
Well, yeah. I mean, what that does is it describes the desperate fear of human beings.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. 100%.
And the deep need of human beings to have some sort of paternal or maternal
guidance. Yeah.
Yeah. And
dude, just raw dog in life without somebody giving you things to do.
Oh my gracious. You forget it, you know?
Yeah.
No, thank you.
Sure enough.
I don't want to do that. Yeah. So, you know, anywho, but if you ever listen to my testimony, that's like literally the reason I became a Christian. I was 6 years old. My parents were present, but like they were going through their own thing. And I felt like I had nobody to tell me. You know, I feel like I had no guidance. I feel like I was just a leaf falling from a tree with nobody to catch me. And Jesus was the pair of hands. So anyway,
nice.
I know, very sweet. Anyway, I need to remind people every once and again that I do believe in Jesus because the stuff I say is like so out there. I think they forget. They're like, ooh, you know. Anyway, so back to the signs and back to growing up as a child and knowing that astrology, not even like, even like knowing your sign and like reading the crappy weekly horoscope in your local paper. That was like super frowned upon.
That's funny.
That was 100% not okay.
I kind of remember a time when you knew that was a thing. Like people were that hardcore about like couldn't Ouija board or whatever.
Yeah, astrology, it's like there was this one homogenous word, you know, for the occult and everything from knowing your sign and reading your horoscope to like using necromancy to raise zombies. Like
same thing.
Everything same all thing. Fell under that same, like, don't do it.
Raising the dead or reading your horoscope.
Oh yeah. I almost got expelled. I went to private Christian high school in Maui and I almost got expelled because I went and saw Sleepy Hollow.
Wow.
Yeah. And when I was in high school, A, because it was rated R, B, because it celebrated the occult. I almost got expelled from school for that.
That's wild.
Yeah. I got in a lot of trouble for that, you know, but anyway, this is all neither here nor there.
Okay. Sorry.
Well, no, I'm not sorry.
I'm dragging you away here.
I will follow. Listen, someone else is watching my kids right now. Bottom line, I'll stay here as long as you keep me. So anyway, no, I love my kids. Anyway, I just like being away from them. So I felt this cognitive dissonance as I would sit in my salon chair doing hair and listen to the neighbors next to me say things like that. Like it's time to cut their hair because they're trying to, you know, make it grow or whatever. And so as I was preparing to do the season's worth of episodes, one of the things that occurred to me was like, okay, so how did we get here? Like, how did we get from astrology, you know, being okay to check the signs to cut your hair to like, no, that's not okay to know what your sign is. And I'd never asked those people because I never queried, but I'm curious if the same folks that would come in and say, it's time to cut my hair because the signs say, I wonder if those exact same people would have never read their own horoscope. I presume they wouldn't have.
No idea. I assume they were probably, there's a high likelihood they were also Christian though.
So I started Googling it. I used the Googles. And the first thing that comes up, of course, is the Farmer's Almanac, which I had never purchased. I have my very own copy of the Farmer's Almanac now, which is exciting. It's overwhelming to me because I don't know if our listeners are familiar. So an almanac, it records and predicts astronomical events like tide and weather with respect to time. So astronomy and astrology. The old Farmer's Almanac, which is what I have a copy of, is exactly that. So let's like take a little time trip back to the 18th century. This guy, Robert B. Thomas, he's cultivated this fondness for astronomy ever since he found Ferguson's astronomy in his father's library. So again, astronomy is the study of celestial objects and their movements and interactions. So he finds this copy of this book, Ferguson's Astronomy, and you know, this book has been selected by scholars as being culturally important and is part of the knowledge base of civilization as we know it. That's the Amazon description of this book.
Wow.
If I gave any shits about science beyond what I learned in eighth grade, I probably would be familiar with why that is.
I think science is very cool.
Well,
I don't
but there
know
was this
book.
Period of time, you know, I mean, where the idea that with a microscope, we could start exploring science and we could start like, you know, tracking and predicting when there was going to be certain weather patterns. I mean, that was a huge part of like human advancement, you know? Yeah. So this guy's astronomy book, Ferguson's astronomy, this was all like a part of this. So this is real science, Ferguson's astronomy, and it uses real math and all that, right? So Bobby B's living his life, and he becomes a schoolmaster for this tiny town that only has a school in the winter. In the spring and summer, he works on his dad's farm, and while he's doing this, kind of continues to cultivate this love for astronomy. So it's like, I don't know, 1786 or something like that. So he does this for a few years, and then he goes on to do bookbinding. And it's really funny because I read a couple of different narratives of his life. And in one of them, he reaches out to this guy like Osgood Carleton for help, you know, because he's got it in his head that he wants to make an almanac.
Osgood Carleton, right? What a name.
I know, right? And that guy like tells him to F off, I think, at first.
Nice.
And Bobby B gets his heart like hurt by it. He gets real offended, but he like keeps pushing and keeps doing this research. And so he's just got it in his head that he wants to make his own almanac. Because by the way, almanacs were normal. Like they were around at the time.
They were very
so
common.
People had created this, you know, had created the math and the science around astronomy. They were studying the heavens. They were putting things down in books. They were trying to predict when to plant their crops and all that whatnot. Because again, back in the day, you know, they didn't have computers and whatever. So they couldn't just, you know, whatever. Anyway, so they're really important. Along comes Bobby B. He wants to make his own almanac because he thinks the other ones are kind of trash. He reaches out to this mathematician, you know, because he wasn't super great at math. And the guy's like, get out of here.
Yeah.
He pursues it. And at the time, of course, he had left schooling and had left teaching and become a bookbinder. He really enjoyed that. So he kind of also had access to like books and bookbinding and printing and all that stuff. So finally, I guess Osgood Carleton kind of, you know, relents and kind of teaches him some math or whatnot. And then he creates this old farmer's almanac. Mm-hmm. And it's like immediately blows up, kicks all other almanacs to the curb, and it becomes like the greatest selling, best selling number one almanac. And old Bobby B was the editor of this almanac till he dies in 1846.
Uh-huh. So that was the farmer's almanac?
Yep. Old farmer's almanac. Now there's two.
Okay.
There's the farmer's almanac and he's the old farmer's almanac. There was a divergence of these two almanacs at some point in like—
Oh, it was like the infamous almanac wars?
Oh, yeah. Just Google that. What
devastated.
A fascinating
People
read.
Were devastated.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, they've both been in production for over 200 years and both of them are cryptic about their math, which
really?
I think is hilarious.
That's funny.
Yeah, both of them are kind of cryptic about their math. So I order this book and I'm kind of looking at it and I'm like, what's the deal? Like, I'm still trying to figure this out. You know, this astronomy versus astrology, right? So astronomy is the science and study of the movement of celestial bodies.
Mm-hmm.
But astrology is the study of how and whether or not, science of how or whether or not those movements have influence on human life and human activity. Okay?
That sounds
distinction.
Good.
So I thought all this is super interesting. So I buy the almanac and I'm like, as I'm reading it, I'm like, this is astronomy, right? It's not astrology.
Yeah.
And then I get to page 226, and this chart is based on the moon sign and shows the best days each month for certain activities. When
really?
You should quit smoking, when you should bake.
Wow.
Hope your birthday doesn't fall on one of the off days because you're screwed.
Yeah. Yes.
No cake for you. When you should buy a home, when you should move, when you should begin a diet to lose weight, or when you should begin a diet to gain weight. When to perm your hair, when to color your hair, when to straighten your hair, when to have your teeth cleaned.
So these women were probably getting that information from that almanac or one like it.
This has when you should wash windows and floors. I'm going to print this one out and put it in my house next time my husband bitches about the windows being dirty and be like, look, the moon told me I can't do it right now.
You know, it's handy. It's a chore schedule.
It's a chore schedule.
And it's one you don't have to make yourself. You're just like, it's what the moon says. Then so I do it on the third, you know?
But it's based on the moon's signs, which I find fascinating.
Moon signs?
Right.
Yeah.
This is not astronomy.
Mm-hmm.
This is astrology.
Yeah.
So that's when I decided I better start doing some digging. So that was sort of the impetus for this entire study. So I figured the best place to start a study of this nature is with the story of the wise men or the magi from the East that follow the quote-unquote star, right, that tells the birth of
Christ.
That
computes, yeah.
Yeah, so I have always I've always heard, you know, in this story, which by the way, that version of the birth only comes up in Matthew, I believe. Okay. That's the only place that has that.
Matthew's the one that diverges the most and in the most ways, kind of in general, isn't it? I believe that's true. Matthew's the one that's the most different of the Gospels.
So I've not heard that. Matthew, Mark, and Luke are called the Synoptic Gospels because they have so much in common, and John is usually the one that's kind of like out there.
Okay.
John's usually the one that's kind of like a little bit different.
I couldn't possibly be wrong about Bible facts.
I don't think you are.
No.
It's possible that you heard something that I didn't hear. Listen, you've been doing this podcast a lot longer than I have. You've listened to a lot of stuff, right? So you might have heard that somewhere. And each gospel has their own flavor.
Sure.
Different authors.
They pass through different
right.
peoples.
And different audiences.
Yeah, different audiences.
Matthew was writing his gospel. Mark is the oldest, probably written about 50 CE. So in and around the time where people still living that remembered Jesus, were present and could have been interviewed or whatever. And then, Mark's first, and then Matthew and Luke really rip a lot from Mark. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of like similarities, but then there's also similarities between Matthew and Luke that aren't in Mark. Mm-hmm. And then John is kind of its own thing. So that's why Matthew, Mark, and Luke are called the Synoptic Gospels. Mm-hmm. And that's why they think that there are other source documents that they were using, like maybe like a fifth gospel. Mm-hmm. That was a circulating story that was common and well-known. That's why Luke and Matthew have some stories that are similar that Mark doesn't have. So I think Matthew's the only one that has the star and like the wise men and the magi.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. And I've always been like, that's kind of like, what does this mean? Like, what does that mean?
Well,
magi from the East.
Also, like just roundly, you got to remember these people at that time, or especially even when you go back to the Old Testament times, these people would not have been scared of things like astrology or astronomy.
Well, so that's
you know what
I'm trying.
I mean?
Well, so that's
they
what
have
I'm
like,
trying to figure out.
They have like magicians and necromancers and all this other.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Back
all of
in
which,
the Jewish tradition,
but see, all of which are things that God has explicitly told the people of Israel not to do.
Yeah, they have a ton of them though.
Right.
Yeah, it's a thing.
So, but that's the thing that's the part about it that got me thinking. Because again, the Jewish nation has been explicitly told a number of times not to worship the sun, moon, and stars. They got in trouble for that all the time because they moved into this land where there was all these other people that had all these other practices. And God's like, in Deuteronomy, we'll get there. But God's like, you're going to want to worship the sun, moon, and stars like these people do, but I'm telling you not to do, mm-hmm. it, don't do it. So how do we get from there to, but you can also look in the stars and see the signs that tell you of the birth of Christ. And so I heard a handful of different reads on this. I heard one read that like, that was the end of astrology being acceptable, mm-hmm. which again, they didn't provide really any evidence of that necessarily.
Right.
I also heard that it was like a one-time event. But at the same time, when Christ was crucified on the cross, there was an astrological symbol. There was like this eclipse.
Uh-huh.
And, it says that there was an earthquake too, like that possibly this like cataclysmic event. Since we don't know the exact timeline of when all these things happen, it's hard to say, but I think there is astronomically, astronomy versus astrology, astronomically, there was like a thing that happened.
There's like an eclipse that could
something.
Have been at the right time.
But the question then becomes, did that happen effect or was that just a coincidence?
Right.
Or was that God demonstrating, their ability to at this time show that God still has control over the sun, moon, and stars and can, use them to make signs for his will or their will. I try really hard to refer to God in the third person plural lately. There, them, they. Because I think trying to lock God into a man or female is very challenging.
We don't use pronouns.
Well, I know it sounds stupid, but I try to remember to do that.
It doesn't sound stupid.
Unless I'm in a room with people that I know are going to have a really hard time with that.
Yeah.
Which might be you listeners. I don't know. I don't know you people. Anyway.
I had a thought I cannot say out loud.
Oh, don't. Tell me later. What is that? Did you ever see Steel Magnolias?
Yeah, but it's been a minute. Yeah.
She says, if you haven't got anything nice to say, well, then come sit next to me.
Oh, yeah.
Olympia
yeah,
Dukakis.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Anyway, as usual, we are not staying on track. You know what's funny, too? It doesn't even have to be anyone but you and I.
No.
You know, like...
No, you seem mostly fine. Yeah.
Well, no, what I mean is like for us to get off track.
Oh, yeah.
You know, when Rick and I, or even Sarita and I are here, I mean, we often will get off track on like biblical studies or biblical concepts, but you and I are just now talking about pop culture and movies and we still can't stay on track. So this is the rub, okay? The fact that astrology and following a star features so heavily in the story and the narrative the Messiah, what does that mean? And so this takes us back, and I've always heard this, and this is true. If you're going to understand the Magi in the East, you have to go back to the book of Daniel, which is a book in the Hebrew Bible, the Old Testament, and I'm going to talk about it because you, Andy, don't know what I'm talking about.
Nope, I don't.
Which is great because I can just talk to you, and if anybody listening also has no idea what I'm talking about, you know, just follow along with Andy. All right. First of all, archaeologically, the book of Daniel is a little bit strange. Mm-hmm. It's half written in Hebrew and half written in Aramaic, which doesn't really make any sense because the Hebrew people didn't start speaking Aramaic till like, I don't know, like a third century. So CE or something like that. Third century BCE. That doesn't make any sense.
Right. Because, seems like probably different authors. That, like
the third century BCE is the period of time from 300 BCE to 200 BCE, right? Mm-hmm. But the book of Daniel is placed, it's the story, in the period of time that Jerusalem falls to the Babylonians, which is the 6th century. So that's the period between 500 BCE to 400 BCE, right?
So it's written.
Let's do the math.
It appeared, yeah.
6th century is 500 BCE to 400 BCE. Mm-hmm. So the 3rd century would be 400 BCE to 300 BCE, right?
So just like 100 years, give or take.
Yeah.
So this is a long time to be a verbal thing, but you know.
But it's kind of confusing.
Yeah.
Right? It shouldn't have been half in Aramaic.
Right.
That it shouldn't have done that if it was supposed to be about this other period of time. But anyways, if we're going to take the book at face value, it's a story of the fall of Jerusalem into the hands of the Babylonians. And so that's where we're going to start, approximately 586 BCE, which is when the Babylonians sack Jerusalem, destroy the temple, and then like cart a bunch of refugees off to Babylon with them. Okay. So we're going to actually like read the text a little bit because I think that's a lot of fun.
Bring on the Bible.
I know you love reading the Bible, Andy.
That depends on the story. Sometimes they're a little harsh.
This is a great...
I'm kidding. Yeah, I'm not kidding, but it was a joke.
This is a good story. All right. So Daniel 1:1, in the third year of the reign of King Jehoiakim of Judah, King Nebuchadnezzar of Babylon came to Jerusalem and besieged it. The Lord let King Jehoiakim of Judah fall into his power, as well as some of the vessels of the house of God. The vessels. Mm-hmm. So some of the accoutrements, candelabras and some of the stuff inside the temple.
I want one of God's candelabras.
Yeah, well, you're not going to want to after you hear what he does.
Okay.
So remember the butt boils?
Uh-huh.
When the people steal the Ark of the Covenant and they all get hemorrhoids and they make golden hemorrhoids. Remember that?
Oh,
you
my
do
God,
not
no.
want to touch God's things. Don't. God says, that's my stuff. Don't touch it.
Wow.
Anyway, but we'll see. You'll see. So the Lord lets Judah get their butt kicked. He's allowing them to get carted off to Babylon. And then it says in verse 3, when he lets them take some of his toys, which King Nebuchadnezzar brings in and puts into their treasury, right? So then the king commanded his palace master, Aphpenaz, to bring some of the Israelites of the royal family and of the nobility, young men without physical defect and handsome, versed in every branch of wisdom, endowed with knowledge and insight, and competent to serve in the king's palace. They were to be taught the literature and language of the Chaldeans. The king assigned them, right, okay.
Okay.
So let's take pause there. So Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah.
Mm-hmm.
These are part of these men that are unapologetically Jewish.
Yep.
They are now captives, exiled. And the king of Babylon obviously thinks that having the smartest and well-bred of Israel to be trained in the ways of the Babylonian court and then used for information or service was of some value.
Sure.
So it's clear that they're trained for 3 years. And then we'll skip ahead. So we're going to go to verse 17. These four young men, God gave knowledge and skill in every aspect of literature and wisdom. And to Daniel, he also gave insight into visions and dreams. So part of that was astrology. Because...
Say that again. I'm so sorry.
So part of that was an understanding of astrology.
Okay, yeah.
Now, at this time, there were two kinds of astrology. There was like mundane astrology and then like natal astrology. Natal astrology comes in later. That's like your personal birth chart.
Okay.
But it was common to make decisions of state based on the stars.
Yeah, I've definitely heard that. Yeah, that's mentioned.
Yeah. When do you go to war? When you say, when do you cut your hair? When you perm your hair?
Bible or just history in general?
Well, history in general, right? So part of being a wise man who was who had the ear of the king or was called upon.
You were,
as to
probably
be.
Astrology, right?
No, you had to be.
Yeah, yeah.
Period.
Forecasting the future in some manner.
Period.
Or attempting to.
Yeah, these were magi, right? So at the end of these 3 years, all the Hebrews are brought before King Nebuchadnezzar, and he chooses these four, Daniel, and they change their names to Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, mm-hmm. and that's what you usually hear them called. So he chooses these four people because he finds them in verse 120 says, 10 times better than all the other magicians and enchanters in the whole kingdom. They were 10 times better at astrology, mm-hmm. at magic, at predicting, at seeing their prayers come to fruition than anyone else.
Wow.
Yeah. So then chapter 2:12 is where Daniel really shines. So they go on and they're doing all these things. There's lots of stuff that happens. But in chapter 2, so the king has this dream, right? And he's like, this is not good. It's a long story. It's a dream about like a statue and it's like falling apart. So he goes and he calls like all of his servants and he's like, this is not good. Like, tell me, all his wise men. He's like, tell me what this dream means. Tell me what my dream means. But he doesn't tell him what the dream is.
He doesn't tell him what the dream is.
Hey, I had a dream. I'm not gonna tell you what it is. You tell me what the dream is and then you tell me what it means, right? Everybody like goes completely bananas because there's no way that they can do that. And then it actually says the king flies into a violent rage and commands that all the wise men of Babylon be destroyed when they can't do that thing, right? So because this decree is issued and the wise men are about to be executed, they look to Daniel and his companions. They were looking for Daniel and his companions to execute them too. So Daniel and his companions are included.
Yeah.
They're not separate from the wise men of Babylon. They're not separate from the Magi.
Yeah.
They are part of the class.
You are also screwed.
Right, you are also screwed. So they start going to round all these people up and like, you know, do away with them or whatnot. So Daniel responds with prudence and discretion. Let me just turn my that was nice. Nice little sound effect. You can hear me turning my Bible page. So he fasts and prays and all this stuff. And then Daniel went in and requested that the king give him time so that he could tell the king the interpretation of his dream. So Daniel does the thing. He interprets the dream. And then Daniel and his friends are once again promoted.
Oh, so does he get the dream right? Are we assuming he?
Yeah. He does.
guesses the dream.
He guesses the dream, but more importantly, God gives him the answer.
Right.
God gives him the answer, both what the dream is and what the dream means. Mm-hmm. So, and Daniel, of course, interprets the dream, but he gives all of the glory to God. And then it says in chapter 2, verse 46, then the king promotes Daniel, giving him many great gifts. And made him the ruler of the whole province of Babylon and chief perfect over all the wise men of Babylon.
Wow.
So, y'all, here's what I'm—
So he's a man with influence.
Well, but here's what I'm getting at. He was a man of influence. He was also a refugee. Yeah. He was a Jewish refugee.
Doing pretty good for himself.
Yeah. And he was unapologetically Jewish at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Unapologetically a Jewish refugee, not in any way, shape, or form trying to hide his identity as a Jew, right? And whilst doing that, simultaneously becomes now the chief prefect over this giant section of Nebuchadnezzar's court, which he physically, literally could not have done if he had been like, yeah, but I don't do astrology.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it doesn't sound like, I don't feel like, despite... Whenever the law came down about other idols, I don't feel like any sort of compunction here in this story against, they're not talking about how Daniel's torn. He's just doing astrology.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. He's not torn.
Right.
He was trained for 3 years. And again, like, so let's just take a step outside the Bible for just a second and let's just look at archaeological evidence. Okay.
Okay.
We have seen evidence of people staring at the stars, which everybody did before there was friggin' TV, Okay, listen, right. The lights went out when the sun went down. Yeah. So people didn't have a whole heck of a lot to do, but take a look at what was going on in the sky. And the people, humanity of all stripes, have been fascinated, sure. excited, and encouraged, and like whatever, by this for a long time. And in almost every single culture wherein this has happened, this reading of the stars has been associated
becomes
with
a thing. Yeah.
Well, with the will of the gods, quote unquote, right? So this has happened everywhere, right? China, India, the Mayans, right? We see this in every single culture. But the oldest, okay, the oldest or earliest record of any culture ever engaging in this activity comes from the second millennium BCE. Second millennium, 2000.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you think they found that?
Oh, I'm going to say Israel because we're talking
Babylon.
About Babylon. Okay. But it's Babylon probably from this era maybe or something, right?
What I'm saying is by the time Daniel is carted off to Babylon and is doing his thing, the study of astrology has been being engaged in and perfected by this culture for like 1500 years.
Yeah, yeah. It's not new.
This is not new. It's not a fad. These people have based their entire religious system of how to please the gods and how to discern the will of the gods, based on this study of the stars and how they move and what they're doing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And actually, like, this isn't even, like, I'm not just, like, making this up because I'm trying to validate my story. I listened to this giant 2.5-hour slog of a podcast on the, like, history of the development of astrology purely from an archaeological standpoint.
What's the podcast? Drop the podcast. If you remember. If not, whatever.
Oh, man.
Whatever. It's fine,
it was
then.
A really cool podcast, too, you know, because, like, he just kind of, you know, he does this whole thing where he just kind of goes through the whole story of it. And so 700 BCE is when the Assyrian Empire kind of like had created all these astrological schools mm-hmm. and had made it the state-sponsored affair.
Yeah.
Because now, aside from being something interesting that people were like doing to try to discern the will of gods religiously, in 750 BCE, about 200 years prior, right, the Assyrian Empire actually like takes it and makes it a state-sponsored affair because now they're going to start trying to figure out how to decide what they're going to be doing with their countries and with their yeah. nations, state affairs. They have astrologers now on board.
Right.
Right. And in the 5th century BCE is when the zodiac was standardized and includes like the 12 signs and 30 degrees. Basically, what we practice in Western astrology today was officially finalized around the time that Daniel was chilling in Nebuchadnezzar's court.
And when was this? You said 1500
BCE? Yeah, this is in the 5th century BCE.
Oh, 5th century.
Yeah, the 5th century BCE. So like, you know, right after, in within the same 100 to 200 years, right, is all this stuff is going on at the same time.
And honestly, this is probably one of those things that there were traditions of it all across the world probably 10,000 years before that.
Yeah.
You know, almost
but
surely.
But what I'm trying to say is from an archaeological standpoint.
But there's no writing, there's not evidence of it. But people probably been looking at the stars and doing that thing for as long as we could make those connections in our head.
Yeah. So just based on what we've seen already, the fact that Daniel was a Jewish refugee living in the Babylonian times, trained by the king and his court and his wise men, his magicians and wise men, trained for 3 years in the language of the Chaldeans and the way that these people are doing things, the people that invented, created, and then perfected astrology so much that's still the system we follow today for the most part.
Sure. Yeah.
It would have been impossible for Daniel to not have both a working knowledge of and a skilled use of astrology. It would have been impossible.
Right, right.
There's no way. Let's go on because there's more. There's more. So we're going to skip ahead to chapter 5. There's some good stuff in here, but mostly like from here on, Daniel's friends kind of get some time. They get a little bit of time in here. Uh-huh. So we're going to go skip forward to chapter 5. So this is Belshazzar's feast is how this story opens. And it opens with King Belshazzar made a great festival for 1,000 of his lords, and he was drinking wine in the presence of 1,000. Under the influence of wine, King Belshazzar, I'm putting the book down because I'm just going to look at Andy. King Belshazzar is like, go get those things we stole from that one temple.
Yeah.
And they bring all God's toys up to the party. And all of a sudden this giant hand appears and like writes some stuff on the wall that nobody can understand. And the king's mother is like trembling. She's like, it's not good. So
she's
goes
like,
and
hands shouldn't appear.
Oh yeah.
Out of
like
nowhere,
this is not a normal thing, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. So Daniel, of course, is the one who can interpret the writing. And what's really interesting is the words that are written there, those are Aramaic words.
Uh-huh.
So
Is that what the Babylonians are speaking at this point?
Absolutely not.
Okay.
No, absolutely not. Neither are the Hebrews. That's what makes the story confusing and a little bit like suspect.
Right.
And not necessarily suspect, but let's just remember all these things were written at different times. They were compiled at different times.
They were verbal. They were transmitted verbally probably for hundreds of years.
Right. So maybe the words in Hebrew that would have been used, you know, because God would have spoken in the language of his people to get the point across, because the point is only Daniel can interpret it.
Right.
Daniel wouldn't have spoken Aramaic yet. So how Daniel, you know what I mean? They wouldn't have written in Aramaic. You can do all these somersaults.
Maybe they just like it because of the mystery.
Right.
How did he know?
You know, you can do whatever you want, but like, it doesn't make any sense. Right. Just whatever. But anyway, so Daniel's able to interpret this stuff. And he says that God is basically like, you touched my toys. You're in super big trouble. Your kingdom is over now. And everybody's like, oh dear, what does this mean? And then the Bible says that night, this kingdom was going to be given to the Medes and the Persians, which is, of course, that's always going on, the Medes and the Persians and the conquest of this whole Mesopotamian area. So it says that night, Darius the Mede receives the kingdom being about 62 years old. So God's judgment is handed down, and then the carrying out of that judgment is super swift. He's like, tonight your kingdom is ending. Your kingdom's going to be given to the Medes and the Persians. And then the Bible says Darius the Mede receives the kingdom being about 62 years old. So.
Are you tired of compromising when it comes to protecting your valuable firearms? Then let us tell you about Carolina Cases, your ultimate destination for hard plastic, impact-proof pistol cases. Carolina Cases are TSA approved and are crafted with high-quality foam, ensuring maximum protection for your firearms during transport or storage. At Carolina Cases, they understand the importance of safeguarding your investments. Carolina Cases provide unparalleled durability, keeping your pistol safe from impact and damage. So hop on over to www.carolinacases.net to explore their wide range of pistol cases designed to meet your specific needs. Don't settle for less. With Carolina Cases, you can ensure your firearms are safely stored, preserve your peace of mind, and protect what matters most. Enter code BUROWS at checkout to receive free shipping.
So there's a couple of things in this story that are strange and archaeological level. Number one, again, it wouldn't have been written in Aramaic.
Right.
But the other unfortunate reality is that there's no such thing as Darius the Mede
anywhere. Say that again, Darius
the Mede. Yeah, it says that Darius the Mede takes over the kingdom.
Okay.
There's no such thing as Darius the Mede. That guy does not appear anywhere else in written history. And so people have kind of been like, they've tried to come up with some different
ideas about who he was,
right? Yeah. But the other problem is that we do actually know who King Belshazzar was.
Yeah, he was real, confirmable.
Very.
Yeah.
And he was Nebuchadnezzar's son, which is what chapter 5 says. Belshazzar, King Nebuchadnezzar's son, goes and gets the toys and brings him upstairs.
So that's incorrect.
It's incorrect. And that's unfortunately the reality of it. King Belshazzar was not King Nebuchadnezzar's son. He might have been his grandson, but we know that he was the son of King Nabonidus, who ruled the Babylonian Empire from 556 to 539 BCE.
Mm-hmm.
Belshazzar, his son, has brief control of the kingdom because Nabonidus puts himself in some sort of weird self-imposed exile. And so his kid's kind of in charge for a hot minute, which kind of lends to the story that while the cat's away, the mice will play.
Yeah, yeah.
So his son just has the kingdom for a period of time.
That's fascinating.
Throwing a big old party.
Dad's away. Right. And he's just out there winging it.
Drag the Israelites' toys up, you know, and then this bad thing happens, right? So again, scholars are going to argue timelines, and as well they should, because we've already seen some confusing things.
And
but
it's
for
difficult
me,
just to double down.
Yeah.
The assumption that we can and should know something that happened thousands of, 2,500, whatever, years ago accurately like that is crazy.
Yeah, it's crazy.
No, we just have good ideas about some stuff, but we know so little. If you just look at the totality of what happened there, we know so little of it.
Yeah.
So.
Absolutely. Just so we're on the same page, this is the context of chapter 5. This is the context of Belshazzar's feast. And there's already been some kind of confusion about his dad actually being Nabonidus. And so there's another big fart sound. And that's the fact that there is a Darius, but it's not Darius the Mede. It's Darius the Persian.
Huh.
And we all know who Darius the Persian is.
Please give me the short version here, because I do not.
Yeah, he's he's the son of Xerxes.
Okay, so importante.
Yeah, of Esther fame. And so this person, Darius the Persian, ruled from approximately 522 to 486 BCE. So probably wasn't Darius the Persian, mm-hmm. or probably wasn't Darius the Mede, because that person doesn't exist. Could have been Darius the Persian, because that lines up with King Nabonidus and his son Belshazzar's
reign. About the right time.
But it means that someone opened a can of whoop-ass
yeah.
that night. And since we know that—
Immediately,
yeah. right. But somebody took the kingdom from King Nabonidus in 539 BCE. So what happens that night between chapter 5 and chapter 6? Cyrus the Great has entered the chat. This is the beginning of the Medo-Persian Empire. You had the Medes and the Persians. They were two separate people. But King Cyrus had lineage from both sides. And so he kind of like united the kingdoms, right? We all know this.
It's like European royalty.
Yeah. And King Cyrus starts to show up real prominently in the Bible, you know, the Hebrew Bible. Some people have suggested that in Isaiah, when there's the prophecy that like a king will rise for his people before the lambs are weaned, he will this, that, and the other, and the lion will lay down with the lamb and everything will be at mm-hmm. peace. You know, it's a prophecy of Jesus Christ, but in temporal times and in like in terms of prophecy being something that matters for now and for later.
Yeah.
Oftentimes it has a current application and a future application. A lot of people think that he was talking about Cyrus the Great, because when Cyrus the Great enters the chat and takes over the kingdom, he does this cool thing and he sends the Jews back home.
Do we know if that was like, was that war or was that just some kind of political maneuvering? Do we know?
That what?
How, when Cyrus took over, what, how that happened at all?
That's just archaeology. That's
okay.
just the time.
So we don't know exactly how or why. We just know it happened.
Why he took over the kingdom?
Well, I mean, how, I guess. We don't know how. We don't, it wasn't necessarily war. It wasn't necessarily political.
Oh, I'm sure someone knows.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sure someone knows. It was outside of the scope of this study, because I'm still trying to talk about astrology. When I do these studies, I need hours, because I start chasing these rabbits all over the place.
Right.
And it takes me forever to like get back to what I was even talking about. By the way, this is a podcast about astrology. And now here we are like debating the finer points of King Cyrus's reign and the impetus for his unification.
Sorry.
Under the Medo-Persian Empire.
I just was curious.
No, but see, the thing is, I'm curious too, but I wasn't allowed. I couldn't let my brain follow that thing.
I mean, the problem with history is that all of history leads to all other history.
Yeah.
Because you got to ignore some parts.
You had all these people, right? So you had the Babylonians, the Chaldean, you had the Assyrian Empire, you had, you know, the Medes, you had the Persians, and you had the Jews, right? And then you had Egypt, right? Right down there, right south, who was constantly coming up and sort of like, everybody's kind of arguing around these periods of time for power. I am not a historian, so I couldn't line it all up for you.
Right.
About what this all is.
Okay.
But I can tell you that I did Google it, and I did do several kind of like basic studies, look like Encyclopedia Britannica and Wikipedia.
Good sources.
And watched some videos on the source of history.
Yeah. Okay,
and so
sorry.
That's what I think is happening right here.
Right.
So this is the beginning of chapter 6. This is the beginning of the Medo-Persian Empire. Now, with the Persians came a ruling priestly class that was called the Magi, later translated into the Latin as Magus, and then later translated into the Greek as Magi.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So the Magi from the East, long involved story to describe these dudes that were a powerful class of people in the Persian Empire that after the conquest of Cyrus the Great also became embedded in the new ruling class of the Medo-Persian Empire, which included Daniel and his buds.
Uh-huh.
They got swept up into that same thing too.
Yeah.
Right.
They got bought out, but they kept a lot of the staff.
Precisely. And, you know, Cyrus sent a bunch of people home, a bunch of Jews home. In the book of Ezra, we see that. You know, Cyrus says the Lord God of heaven told him to send his people home. And so a bunch of Jews like head back and start rebuilding the temple. And, and there's this whole thing, right? That's the whole book of Ezra. There's a cylinder, the Cyrus cylinder, which tells us that that did happen, but he actually was giving glory to his god Marduk, who was the Lord God of all people, and was displaying some mercy to these lesser gods, including the lesser god of Israel. That's actually what Cyrus said was happening. So Jews have a slightly different like what's recorded in their version of the story is like a little bit different than what Cyrus recorded in his version of the story, right? So in any case, but Daniel and his bros, I think, Daniel and his bros like chilled. They didn't go. There were a lot of people that didn't go. There were a lot of people that had created a life for themselves.
Sure, yeah. If you had a life, especially if you had position in that life was relatively good, it would be difficult to go.
Yeah, you want to give that up to go back to war-torn Israel and start rebuilding a thing that had been bombed out and destroyed.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know? You have a nice life here.
Well, and—
If you have. Some of them did.
Oh, yeah. And Daniel— Also, keep in mind, Daniel and his bros that are swept up into this priestly caste, they never stopped worshiping their God.
Yeah, yeah. They're still openly Jewish.
Yeah, they're openly Jewish, undeniably Jewish. And so that wasn't like an issue for them. So it's not like going home for them signified the ability to return to their original religious way of life and the worship of Hashem, which was, of course, inextricably tied to the temple and the sacrificial system.
So I guess what you're saying is that era of Babylon just wasn't one of those like religiously oppressive kind of nation states or whatever.
Well, as long as you weren't disobeying the king.
Yeah, okay. Well, I think
as long
a lot of places were like that.
You were still living in service of the king because in Mesopotamian and Babylonian, you know, and in many
follow all the laws, pay cultures, all your taxes.
Many cultures. Yeah. Well, you know, the ruler, the reigning king is chosen by God and is God, you know, one of the gods.
They're all divine at that point in history. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and you're talking about sort of these polytheistic cultures that, you know, have all these different gods and have all these different systems of worship. And interestingly enough, especially in ancient Near East culture, one of the Canaanite origin stories is like the story of Tiamat and this big giant battle and the gods getting in a big fight, Marduk, which is who King Cyrus gives the glory to in the cylinder. I can't remember. I got to Google it.
Okay.
The something cylinder.
Yeah, you can move. Yeah. Doesn't matter.
So in their creation myth, human beings are created at the end of that story to be the servants of the gods. That's their entire relationship to the divine is you guys were made to serve
servants.
Us and to do what we are going to tell you to do. Versus, and I want y'all to hear me now, the Jewish belief that their God created them for a relationship.
Yeah, for companionship, sort of.
Very different.
Yeah.
So because these are two different origin stories and myths, right? Whereas here you have the Genesis creation story, humanity is created to be the steward of and the caretaker of the creation, to name all the animals, everything here has been given for you. I'm going to come down and walk with you in companionship. Versus this other creation myth where like Tiamat's body is like Marduk's mom. I can't remember, y'all. Don't hold me to it. Google it. But her body's like ripped apart and it becomes the Tigris and Euphrates River. You know, that her two legs become that. And then like in the center of where her bits would be is the Fertile Crescent or the Mesopotamia, right? And basically humans are created to do that thing, just like God's story to be in charge of the earth and all stuff. But it's slavery and it's servitude.
It's to keep the garden
different.
Completely different.
So service of the king and obedience to the king, which is inexorably tied to their religious practices because the king was chosen by the gods vis-a-vis astrology and the signs in the heavens giving you the portent of who's in charge. So to defy the king and to not be obedient and to not follow along, right, means that you are to defy their gods as well, right? Which is also very interesting because in the culture of the Hebrew Bible, at some point, the Jews are like, look, we are floating around out here, these 12 weird tribes. We don't like it because everybody else has a king. Oh, Greg, thanks, man. Thanks for the sound effects. I like that.
My cat's just throwing things at the ground.
Yeah,
all right, sorry.
But the Jews are like, we want to be like these other kingdoms. We want to have a kingship. We want a king. And God's like, God's like, no, I don't want that for you guys. I told y'all I don't want that for you.
Right.
But they wanted it. They wanted to be like these other kingdom.
Yeah, they've done that exact kind of thing on a number of occasions, right? Like, that's a part of the story.
It's part of the story.
God will be like, that's not how this works for you. And they'll be like, but...
Yeah, and they did the same thing at all the other nations
else
did.
Is doing it.
They let their God choose their king. First, God chose Saul, and then Saul was doing good and everything, and then he started sucking. And so God said, okay, well, he's not going to be king anymore. And unlike most kingships, whenever your son is given the next reign, God's like, and he goes and chooses David, a little shepherd boy from Judah, which is like, oh.
Lord, he's
a... That was a good sound effect. He was like putting a punctuation.
He usually
punctuating
just...
Punctuating the story.
There's a couple... thimbles and pennies on that shelf, and those are there for him to throw off.
Yeah,
he usually doesn't chuck the guitar pedals on the ground, though. Sorry.
He's having a good time. Look, he's going to do it again. Anywho, so this is the context. Medo-Persian Empire, new ruler, Israelites people, like, still hanging out. And again, it's weird because Darius the Persian, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's the son of Xerxes.
Okay.
And Esther.
Okay. Okay. Well, yeah, that's interesting how it ties back.
But that piece of the dynasty, it like doesn't show up because in our story, the Bible story goes right from Nebuchadnezzar to Belshazzar. And that doesn't make any sense because then Belshazzar gets trashed and then Darius the Persian takes it. It's like it doesn't quite, something's not lining up.
Yeah, the timeline's not
So I'm operating under the assumption that Darius the Persian is the Darius in question. Whereas some people operate under the assumption that Darius the Mede, I'm assuming it was a mistranslation based on the fact that they also miscalculated who Belshazzar's dad was. It was King Nabonidus, not King Nebuchadnezzar. So it was probably the king of Persia, but Darius the Persian. But then there would have been, and I want to acknowledge this, there would have been a big chunk of the story missing.
Yeah.
Like all the story of Esther would have happened in here.
Yeah, yeah, that makes sense.
That would have been weird.
Again, that's kind of history for you.
Yeah, so, and I just want to pause and I want to acknowledge that. But something is also amiss and awry in these stories. So all I can do is move on.
Yeah, to do your best.
The way that I can.
Right.
So anyway, I'm going to-
This is what we do with all of ancient history. Put it together the best you can and kind of throw your hands up because you can't know everything.
Right. So Medo-Persian Empire- Daniel and his buds, they're, what did you say? New management, same staff.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they were bought out. They were bought out, but they kept some of the staff.
Yeah,
they
exactly.
kept some of the staff.
And they certainly kept some of the managers, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Some of the people at the very, very top.
Some of them had experience that would be difficult to replace.
Yeah, and so as this power transfers into the hands of this new priestly class that's being included, the Persians, and there's this mingling of like now Persian magi and the Babylonian magi.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you know, this in the estuary, as it were, Daniel and his friends are swept up into it. So it was already clear that he was the chief astrologer in Nebuchadnezzar's court and that he's now going to occupy a similar role in the Medo-Persian Empire because in chapter 5 to 6 is when this weird time period happens. Power is now transferred. Medo-Persian Empire starts. Although, again, it doesn't make any sense because it would have started earlier. Anyway, it doesn't matter. If Esther was in there.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
something happens, you know, something they've gotten some things screwed up. But Daniel is still serving in the Medo-Persian Empire. He chose not to go home. So in chapter 6, Daniel's made the president of 120 satraps, like straight away.
The president? Oh,
yeah.
The what? Okay.
President of 120 satraps.
Okay.
And the use of satraps, I think, let me see if I can, well, I'm going to Google that real quick. This is another thing that's kind of critical in terms of translations. So satraps were the provincial governor in the ancient Persian Empire.
Okay. Yeah, I was kind of trying to understand what was going
right.
on there. Thank
so,
you.
So the fact that this word now is used, he's now the president over all these satraps, that also sort of signifies the shift from Babylon to Persia, which
so
would again
still,
be the Medo-Persian Empire.
Still very powerful position, though.
Still very powerful position. Yeah. But also now, again, there's this influx of other magic people. Magicians, astrologers, and again, like Assyria had astrological schools. Mesopotamia, the very earliest documentation we have of people engaging in astrology is in this period, in this space, in Mesopotamia. And so all of these cultures that we're talking about in and around this, that includes all of them. They all were engaging in astrology.
Sure.
And they were all engaging in the same type of astrology, which can't be said for what they were doing in Egypt. Can't be said for what they just came up with in China. Can't be said for what happened in India. Vedic astrology in India is very different. Mm-hmm. But the astrology that I'm talking about now is the astrology that tells you when you get your fucking hair cut.
Yeah,
and that is Western astrology.
Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
This is the story of how that got to be here, both on a archaeological level and on a spiritual level.
Uh-huh.
How do we get here? Sorry, I'm using F-bombs because I can. I'm here by myself.
Because I'm here by myself.
So, you know.
I am so offended.
I know. And I'm sure you'll do that thing where you like make it a piano sound or whatever so that people aren't actually having to hear it in real time.
No, no. God forbid. God forbid the word makes the sound.
Well, I mean, you know. People don't like, that's fine. That's Sorry. Okay. Lots of people don't like lots of stuff, you know,
yeah,
I don't
that's
care.
True.
But I'm not trying to check myself quite so much. So, which I probably should anyway, continue to check myself. Point is, now we have a Persian system of government and Daniel is still being placed in the priestly class of magi and rulers.
He's obviously very valuable for
very, very
some
valuable.
Reason. Yeah.
Couldn't possibly have been this powerful without a working knowledge of and a skilled use of astrology.
Sure.
Because if his predictions were crap, he wouldn't have been so powerful.
Well, yeah,
he
probably
been
headless.
So he understood it and he knew how to use it. All right. So this is when Daniel gets into trouble, okay? Because like people do, there are other power mongers in the Persian Empire. And within that priestly caste that get all jelly about Daniel's promotion.
Sure.
And so they cook up this plan to
get
him.
People always want power.
To get him adiosed.
Yeah. Makes sense.
So they go to the king and they're like, oh, check it out. And people that are familiar are going to be real familiar with the story I'm about to tell. So they cook up this plan to get Daniel in trouble. And they go to the king and they're like, hey, Darius, why don't you like make a rule that for the next 30 days, nobody can worship any other god but you, since you are chosen by the gods as right. their divine representative on earth.
Oh, this is interesting.
Let's just do that, right? And Darius is like, yeah, that's a good plan. I love
Darius
it.
Darius is like, yeah, worship me.
Do that. I'm down. But the thing is, obviously, the magi in the priestly court of the Persians, who are the ones that cooked up this plan, I think, because his friends, the other people he was, you know, he was in charge with, I don't think they would have done that to him because, like I said, they'd already been working together under King Belshazzar, King Nabonidus for all this time. Anyway, so they cook up this whole plan and they're like, oh yeah, and by the way, if anyone who is out there worshiping a god that's not you in these next 30 days, why don't we like chuck them in the lion's den and they'll get gobbled? And this is the story of Daniel
so
the lion's den.
I see. That's why they're
so right.
This is their weird right. little power play.
And again, so, and they did this because they knew that Daniel would
right.
consistently
he's gonna worship
and unapologetically
his own god. Yeah.
worship his own god and not worship the king, because despite the fact that he was an astrologer, a powerful and important and good, accurate astrologer within the Babylonian court, did not mean that he was also worshiping those planets and stars as gods.
Right.
He was only worshiping his own god. He was an unapologetic Jew. So this course, that story, right? Daniel gets chucked in the lion's den. God shuts the mouths of the lions. And also, it should be worth noting that, like, Darius was not happy. When he finds out that Daniel is now going to have to get murdered, he's, like, not stoked.
How many historical stories? I feel like there's a couple stories in the Bible that kind of have a thread like that, where it's like somebody convinced a king to do a thing that—
Oh, yeah.
what they thought was good, and then the repercussions of it were something that they were like, hey, wait a minute.
This episode is brought to you by Carolina Cases. Are you tired of compromising when it comes to protecting your valuable firearms?
Yes.
No. Well, okay, fine. I'm cool with firearms. I just don't have any. But I can see why you would want to protect them, right? So let us tell you about Carolina Cases, your ultimate destination for hard plastic, impact-proof pistol cases. Carolina Cases are TSA approved and are crafted with high quality foam, ensuring maximum protection for your firearms during transport or storage. At Carolina Cases, they understand the importance of safeguarding your investments. I can understand that. I have investments. I just don't have firearms. Carolina cases provide unparalleled durability, keeping your pistol safe from impact and damage. So hop on over to www.carolinacases.net to explore their wide range of pistol cases designed to meet your specific needs. Don't settle for less. With Carolina Cases, you can ensure your firearms are safely stored, preserve your peace of mind, and protect what matters most. So go to www.carolinacases.net. And then enter code Burrows at checkout to receive free shipping. That's B-U-R-R-O-S at checkout to receive shipping. Thanks, guys.
And the thing is, so here's what's funny. So he's very much distressed. That's what the Bible tells us. Very much distressed. And he spends the whole day until sundown trying to find some way to save Daniel. Which is exactly, if you're wandering around assuming that King Darius the Persian is the son or of Xerxes, who, of course, married Esther, who is, of course, a Jew, and that whole thing. Haman, Bible story in 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Xerxes has a wife, her name's Vashti. He throws this big-ass party and invites all the people around, all the rulers to come and, like, celebrate. And Vashti, and he gets super, super drunk, and he tells Vashti, who's, like, she's chilling with all the chicks in the court, and he's chilling with all the dudes in his court. And he's like, hey, Vashti, come get dressed and look sexy and come stand in front of my people. And she's like, no, I'm not doing that. It's weird. So he orders her to be banished from the court and then wakes up the next day and is like, shit, I don't want to do, why did I do that? Can I just make, I want her back. And his advisors are like, brother, you cannot do that because you're just going to set a precedent that people can openly defy you.
Right, right, yeah.
So that's when he like goes and finds all the prettiest virgins. That includes Esther. She happens to be a Jew. Her uncle Mordecai, who's her keeper, which, you know, probably because Jews, again, were exiled here. She was separated from her parents at some point. They might be dead, probably dead. You know, he's like, don't tell anyone you're a Jew. So already the Jews don't have a favorable...
Yeah, don't necessarily, even though Daniel's out here being a Jew.
If that's possible. See, I don't know.
Right.
I'm curious about it, but...
Maybe he's not yelling it. Maybe he's worshiping in his own way, but he's not like, I'm a Jew.
Yeah, but what's interesting here is Darius finds out that Daniel is not worshiping him, but still worshiping his own God, and he doesn't really care. He's not mad about that.
Right.
He doesn't, you know what I mean? He doesn't see that as defiance, which is not normal.
It's also maybe one of those things that in his head, it was meant for a specific job or a specific people, and Daniel's a guy he knew, so not him.
Unless
maybe
the timeline is messed up.
Which could be,
and
sure.
And Darius the Persian was the daughter of Xerxes and Esther, and so he was half Jew.
Hmm. Hmm.
Unless, which I don't know that Esther's identity as a Jew was ever like common knowledge, because that's when Haman cooks up the plan. So anyways, this takes forever, but it has to be said if this is the case. So Esther is chosen to be the wife of the queen, and her uncle Mordecai is like hangs out by the gate of the palace all the time because he loves her. It's like his daughter. He's so distressed. He can't believe this happens. Right. You remember.
We have a, if anybody that cares to dig, we have a, an Esther series that's worth a listen.
Yeah. I remember that when I very first came on this show, you guys were in the middle of that. And I was like so excited because Esther's one of my favorite stories in the whole wide world. And so Mordecai, while he's chilling at the front gate, he hears this story that someone's plotting to kill the king. And so he tells, because he doesn't want the king to get killed, and it gets recorded in the annals of history, blah, 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 later on. Yeah. King can't fall asleep. So he's like, bring me those boring annals of the history of my kingship, because those are so friggin' boring, I'll fall asleep. And then he reads that Mordecai didn't get what he deserved, which was some recognition for the fact that he saved his life. So
and
he
not
calls
only
his,
that, was he was in the process of like about to be hung.
Well, wait, so... No, he wasn't about to be hung. What Xerxes does is he calls in Haman, who's his number one chief advisor, who, unbeknownst to the king, has this huge beef with Mordecai because Mordecai is chilling at the gates every single day waiting to hear about Esther, any kind of news he can get from her. And every time Haman walks by, Haman believes that Mordecai should be giving him some kind of sign of respect or worship. And Mordecai's like, fuck you.
Yeah, yeah.
You aren't my God. So Haman already has beef with Mordecai. So Haman is called into the king's room. He's like, hey, what should be done for someone who has done something great for the king? Haman thinks he's talking about him. So he's like, oh, he should, you know, wear whatever, do this thing. So he says, do that, but do it for Mordecai at the front. And Haman's like so humiliated because he thought he was talking about him. That's where he cooks up a plan, not only to have Mordecai killed, but to have the entire Jewish nation exterminated. So he does,
out of order,
almost the exact same thing that's being done in Daniel.
Yeah.
Almost the exact same thing. The rulers of the king, slightly underneath the king, the priestly class, of astrologers and magi that were now a part of this kingdom that Daniel was a part of because of the change of power. They go to the king and they're like, hey, why don't you do this thing? Because they know if he does this thing, it's going to make Daniel get killed.
Right.
So he goes and he says, why don't you just like have all the Jews exterminated because they suck anyway? And the king's like, all right, whatever. Because he knows that Mordecai's going to get swept up in that death.
Right.
And that is when Esther's identity is revealed and she uses her place as queen to save her people.
Right.
Same thing. As soon as the king finds out that Esther is a Jew, he's highly distressed. Just like King Darius
with
in
Daniel.
This story.
Yeah.
He's highly distressed. And so, you know, but just like in Daniel, once the king has decreed a thing, it cannot be undone. It cannot be undone.
Yeah, yeah.
So exactly like the story of Esther, where he then creates a difference. Yeah. So he signs another edict that says the Jews have the right to bear arms and gather.
Right.
So they can basically defend themselves and everything's fine. Well, I find the similarities between the stories very interesting.
Yeah, absolutely.
And a non-Christian might just look at that and be like, yeah, duh, because they like to use certain themes when they're telling their story. Uh-huh. Or maybe the timeline in Daniel is kind of screwed up.
Yeah.
And
the thought I had was definitely like, maybe these two stories are really one story that history has kind of pulled apart into two stories. They could have literally happened at the same time, maybe.
And what's interesting about these texts, you know, is we'll never really know.
No, absolutely not.
We don't have, you know, there's a lot of filling in the gaps. Just like in Jurassic Park, when they find the mosquito with DNA. And they have to go find other DNA to fill it in, okay? That's what we're doing.
So I was listening to Dan Carlin like a couple weeks ago, Hardcore History. I don't know if I ever mentioned this. I might have said this on this podcast already. But he's talking about like the Persian Empire and like that era. And he gets to a certain era and he's like, all we have as far as like, air quotes, good history for this era is this one author, and we absolutely know he's full of shit.
Isn't that awful?
Yeah. And he's like, but it is all
it's all we have to go on.
So we just try to weed the obvious bullshit out of the truth, and we can do is do our best.
Oh, yeah.
But we know this guy's full of crap.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So that's a lot of ancient history is like one source, and you absolutely know it's half bad. You just don't know which half.
Yeah. So I
so it's hard.
I had to choose as I was doing this research which version of the story I preferred to believe, whether this was a mistake on the part of the recorders and they really meant Darius the Persian, and then there's this big gap in between that they missed, you know, and Esther fits in neatly right there, or Darius the Mede is a totally different person.
Sure.
Either way, the story is there was a change of power.
Yeah.
In that change of power, new people were brought in, probably Persians. And within that concept, within that construct, Daniel is saved. Daniel becomes, you know, part of this new priestly class, which includes his Babylonian, includes the Persian, original Babylonian wise men and the Persian wise men. So now there's different schools of thought. They're all involved. And Daniel gets thrown in the lion's den. God shuts the lion's mouths. King Darius is like stoked because he didn't want Daniel to die anyway. He was like super sad that Daniel was like going to get in trouble. Not super sad that Daniel was worshiping his God. Didn't seem to give a shit about that.
Yeah, he wanted that guy.
Yeah, so he throws the other guys in there and now they're all like destroyed. So what I thought was really fun about this particular story is who are these people? The Persians, right? I got to scroll through my notes. I have 8 pages of notes, and they're all over the place. And
Research is kind of fun when you get into it.
Oh, yeah. And so this story is basically the most insane office rivalry gone bad. Terrible. But Daniel winds up on top. And again, he's giving even more power, right? He's giving more power. And he continues to do his thing and be an advisor to the king and has all of these wonderful... It's when he starts having also all of these visions about the future and the rest of the book. It's actually a really short book. But Daniel, the rest of it is just him continuing to live his life as this person with all this power. So since we're kind of trying to hold that this is the beginning of the Medo-Persian Empire and that the presidents and satraps, again, which was an entirely Persian structure of government, these Persians that came in were trying to get Daniel in trouble. Let's do a little archaeological digging and find out who the Persian magi were, because that is the people who eventually became Daniel's that found the star.
Yeah.
Well,
oh, okay.
Right.
Okay.
So we have this thing.
I forgot where we were going.
So we have this thing called the Bahistun Relief, and it's a great place to start. Mm-hmm. It is a, like, think Mount Rushmore. It's this giant relief carved into the side of this giant mountain, and it's inscribed in three languages. And we know that the Persian did it. We know that Darius the Persian did it. So this is, again, somewhere like from 522 BCE to 486 BCE. Mm-hmm. And he wrote it in three languages because he wanted everybody to know exactly, everybody to have no question. And what it is it's the story of his life and basically his right to be in charge.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Seems like a thing a king would do.
Which is a thing a king would do. But a king would also lie.
Sure.
So he's distant cousins to the current king. His name is Cambyses. Cambyses goes to Egypt for a period of time, and then he returns. This is according to the Bahistun relief. Mm-hmm. Cambyses returns, and some accident befalls him. Now, according to Darius, before Cambyses peaced out to Egypt for some period of time, he decided to murder his own heir just for shits and giggles, apparently.
Yeah, apparently being in a royal line is kind of a hard gig sometimes.
So he's like, I'm just going to go ahead and like adios this dude so that he doesn't try to take over my kingdom while I'm chilling in Egypt.
Sounds like a thing.
But then doesn't tell anybody that he did this. Then he returns and then again accidentally dies, which whatever. And then the magi of the Persian court, the magicians, the astrologers.
Yeah. The Magi.
What did they do? They consulted the stars and they put the person who belonged on the throne on the throne. Because that's what they did.
Yep.
And Darius is like, no, that wasn't him. Because Cambyses dumped him, you know, put him in the river before he left for Egypt. Which again, nobody knew about.
Yeah.
So Darius, the Bahistun reliefs, like Darius is like, so this guy's obviously a lookalike and an imposter. So I'm going to murder that dude. And I'm going to take over the throne, which obviously belongs to me in the first place, because I am the actual descendant of Cambyses. And this guy was clearly an imposter because the real guy got murdered by Cambyses before he went to Egypt. There's no corroborating evidence for any of that.
Yeah, it's just...
But again, we have this same... And I want to highlight this because I want it to be... As I continue to study, this is an important part of how astrology is used. So what does he do? He wipes out all the magi, wipes them out. And then he only takes with him, only keeps in his Persian class of people that, of course, astrologers that are going to be favorable to him and to his reign and rule.
Well, if it sounds like if the magi collectively, in the absence of a king, if they collectively had the power to choose a new king, we already talked about how much land and power Daniel had. So all these magi are probably basically like also giant provincial governors and things like that.
So this is important, right? Like these magi, these astrologers, they had a lot of power because they were responsible for reading the stars and the planets, which in their religious belief system was essentially the gods sending out a newsletter.
Yeah.
And the only people who could read it were the astrologers. But if they read that newsletter and it was not favorable to the people in charge, so there was a lot of pressure
on astrologers,
right? Yeah. To find some way to manipulate astrology to favorably tell the story of the fate of the people in charge because their fate was the will of the gods written in the stars.
Right.
But essentially, these Persians now that are part of the court, because what happens? Darius, back to the Bible, back to chapter 6, back to the lion's den, back to Daniel didn't get gobbled. The other guys did.
Yeah.
So the only people left now are the Persian wise men, the Babylonian wise men, and Daniel is kind of on top of all of them. Because first of all, he defied the king and continued to worship his own God. And not only did he not get in trouble, the people that tried to get him in trouble got stuck in the lion's den.
Yeah, they got punished.
Yeah.
Punished, air quotes.
And the idea now being that Daniel continued not only to be an astrologer, but to probably train other astrologers as they rose up. And as part of that training, because Daniel was an unapologetic Jew the entire time, he taught those astrologers about the prophecies regarding the Messiah. and trained them about the particular astrological omens that they ought to be looking for, which
because
is
that's,
how
yeah, that's a part of his
they
religious
followed
tradition.
The star to find the birth of, to find the Christ.
There it is.
And which for me was really fascinating because I've always wondered who were the Magi. That's a big part of the story. And, you know, it's a huge part of the nativity scene, even though it's only in Matthew.
Right.
It's a big part of the story for a lot of Christians.
Oh, yeah. It's huge.
And I've always been like, who are the Magi? And what is this vague, the East? And it's fun because in nativity scenes, they always look totally different. Like, they always like have these giant turbans and like they look Middle Eastern. And
they look more Middle Eastern than usually the Jews are represented.
Yeah. And so I've always been like, I don't understand. And people will often say to me, oh, it's because of Daniel. Like, that's the end of the sentence, right? Yeah. So if you out there are listening to this and you have also queried about the Magi and what this vague reference to the East might mean, hopefully this creates a little clarification for
well,
you.
That's neat. That's a neat circle.
Yeah. And this is where I started my research because the only obvious reference to astrology and its use in the hands of monotheistic Hashem worshiping Jews is this story. That's it.
Yeah.
And Daniel. And you have to extrapolate based on what we know archaeologically about astrology, not astronomy, astrology. Mm-hmm. Okay. And discerning the will of the gods or God through the way these stars influence human life or whatever. The interpretation of those things, like you could not have been in the positions that we have read in the Bible Daniel was in.
Yeah.
If you didn't know how to do that.
If you didn't have some sort of success.
Right. So I think we'll probably have to put a pin in this one because this is a lot.
It is a lot. That was interesting, though. You got it all the way back.
Yeah.
You brought it all the way back to the Magi. Yeah.
I brought it all the way back to Magi. And, you know, and this again is, so what then comes up next for me and what we'll kind of take a look at in the next episode is, so how is it that Daniel was able to be both a skilled astrologer and an unapologetic worshiper of the one true God? What does that look like? And what does that mean for us? Because again, you know, in Mesopotamian culture, where there's all these crossovers, right? We say Mesopotamian, but like I said, the Chaldeans, the Persians, the Medes, all these people, they're all kind of like intermingling and they're all fighting. They're all warring.
Yeah.
They're all polytheistic. And they all associate natural phenomena with their gods, who they see as antagonistic, for the most part.
To each other.
And to humanity.
Oh, to humanity.
Because you're talking about a people whose origin story is, you guys were created to be slaves.
Yeah.
So if you're bad slaves, I'm going to adios you. If you're a good slave, I might make you king. You're welcome. You're welcome. Right? So all these, you know, movements of the heavens, for these cultures, they're terrifying reads. They're scary because they could mean all this other stuff. You know, like you're going to get murdered.
Yeah.
And someone else is going to be in charge.
Like, and the king.
Or like this star happens or this portent happens and then this other person is rising up that's not your, that they're going to take over. You know, if an astrologer reads that, likely, A, that astrologer is going to get adiosed and the person that they think is rising is going to get adiosed. Or unless that person's able to do it in the astrologer is able to tell that story in like a sneaky fashion, right?
Right.
Then they might be given more power. And the person that the star said was going to rise to kingship is also still adiosed. What I'm trying to say is, okay, there was a lot of murdering done in the name of the stars.
Yeah.
A lot of murdering. Okay. And somehow, Daniel is able to remain faithful.
Yeah.
To his religious practices. He is able to continue to curry favor. And he's able to remove himself somewhat from the excuse for violence and power that other astrologers are using astrology to justify. Okay?
Yeah.
So in our next episode, we're going to take that statement right there and we're going to dissect it just a little bit more and we're going to ask ourselves, how is it possible that Daniel was both a skilled astrologer and a worshiper of the one true God that was able to remove himself from all of this toxic culture that was baked in and completely embedded
yeah.
in astrology and religious practices of ancient times and ancient Mesopotamia.
Very interesting. Next. Yeah, that's cool.
Next time on Notes from the Underground.
That was nice.
Yeah.
Should we do the... I don't know.
Oh, who does that?
I don't usually Rick, but sometimes somebody else. I don't even... There you go. Good enough.
Yeah, good enough.
All right. I want to hit stop.
Okay.
Hey, guys. This is Rick from the Burrows of Berea. Do you know how much blood, sweat, and tears it takes to make a podcast? None. But that doesn't mean that it doesn't cost a lot. And so if you guys don't mind, if anybody would like to give to help us with these episodes, it would be great. We'll put out even more content. And if you go to our Patreon page, just search for the Burrows of Berea, you'll get extra notes, extra episodes, and it's pretty much free. A dollar gets you a lot. Thanks, guys.